Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Tuesday morning. It is November 26th, and we're getting closer and closer to Thanksgiving, just 2 days away. And I know many people may be busy heading out the door today. We'll have a complete weather forecast for you as well. First, I want to tell you what's coming up in the show. We're very excited to have an update on a developing story with our friend Rob Muse, attorney Rob Muse with the American Freedom Law Center. It's so good to see people fighting back. And we're seeing this across the board in so many areas, not just before the election, but even after the election. I think people are getting, they're saying, okay, maybe I feel like I have my voice back. And I see this happening in the media, where the media are being taken to task. And I want to ask Rob Muse this question as well, because I was talking about this yesterday with my colleague at Ave Maria Radio, Vanessa Denha-Garmo, who's a regular guest host for me here on Catholic Connection, about how in just one episode of The View on ABC last week, the host had to read four legal notes coming from their legal department, obviously, because of concerns based on the comments they're making about particular people, most of whom, if not all of whom, either work for the new Trump administration or are extremely to the right of center, so they disagree with them strongly on most everything under the sun. Can you imagine four legal notes in one radio show or one TV show? What does that say? That says that what they are claiming has, there's real issues with the statements that they're making. So much so that attorneys at ABC are concerned about lawsuits. And I say, good, they should be concerned, because you can't go around defaming and slandering people, although they've gotten away with a lot over the years. But this tells me that the networks are on their heels and they're concerned about this, which is a good thing. They should be. They should want to be factual and respectful. You can have a strong opinion, but you shouldn't be attacking people in the way they have. And they're being called out for it. And very embarrassing for them to have to read all those statements. But I think those statements that they're reading, outside of what they actually say, speak for themselves. So we'll talk about that with Rob Muse. And then I think you're really going to enjoy this interview that I just did recently with this wonderful priest, Father Cornelius Buckley, 99 years young, and just published a book about the amazing Father Fessio and his life, which continues to be a miracle to us in so many ways, especially all the great work Father continues to do, Father Fessio, with Ignatius Press, which he founded. But Father Cornelius is a fellow Jesuit. In addition to talking about the life of Father Fessio, he also talks about the Jesuit order, what happened to it over the years, why did it go in certain directions, and you know, what does it have to say about how we bring it back to what it was meant to be. So that I think you're going to enjoy. He talks about the book he wrote about Father Joseph Fessio, a wonderful friend of ours here at EWTN and Ave Maria Radio, and Father Cornelius at 99 years young. We should all be that sharp now, not to mention, God willing, if we get to live to our 90s. So that is a program for today. We do need to give you the news, but right now, let's check the weather. Taking a look at the national weather scene for today and this week, pre-holiday travel could feature some unsettled weather for the Great Lakes area, Mid-South, and Ohio Valley. Weather Service saying another storm system will bring some mountain snow and rain to the west the next few days. And Thanksgiving Day also looking pretty messy for the eastern third of the country, with rain and snow dominating. Right now, let's take a look at the news on a Tuesday morning, November 26, 2024. And don't forget this show brought to you by our friends at House of Joppa, the website houseofjoppa.com. Pope Francis recognizing a miracle attributed to Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati's intercession yesterday, paving the way for his canonization as a saint during the Catholic Church's Jubilee year next summer. Frassati, who died at the age of 24 in 1925, is loved by many young Catholics today for his enthusiastic witness to holiness that reaches to the heights, a quote from him. As Catholic News Agency explains, a young man from a northern Italian city of Torino was an avid mountain climber and a Third Order Dominican known for his charitable outreach. His canonization will occur during the Jubilee of Youth in Rome on August 3rd of next year. In a decree yesterday, the Holy Father recognizing the miraculous healing of a seminarian from the Archdiocese of Los Angeles who was recently ordained a priest back in June of 2023. Vatican says the seminarian had damaged his Achilles tendon in a basketball accident while playing with other seminarians, but was completely healed after praying a novena to Frassati. John Paul II, who beatified him in 1990, called him a man of the eight beatitudes, describing him as entirely immersed in the mystery of God and totally dedicated to the constant service of his neighbor. Pope Francis yesterday urging young Holy Land peacemakers to keep hope alive. As Joseph Tulloch tells us from the Vatican, the Pope was meeting with a group of representatives from the Universal Peace Council.
He appealed to the participants, who came from different religious and cultural backgrounds, to place hope, dialogue and reconciliation at the heart of their work as great artisans of peace. The Pope praised the young delegates' commitment to peace in the Holy Land, which, he said, has once more been engulfed in the dark clouds of conflict. And he emphasised that young people can play a key role in the peace process because of their idealism. However, the Pope emphasised, their task is not easy. And for this reason, he offered three brief points for reflection. The Pope emphasised that young people have the ability to heal old wounds and put aside prejudice. Young people remind us that a better world is possible, he said. At the same time, the Pope warned against the danger of ideology, saying that it hinders creativity and the will to do good. An unhealthy attachment to hurts and prejudices, the Pope stressed, can never lead to true and lasting peace. Dialogue is the only way to peace, the Pope emphasised, calling on young people to always seek closeness with others and mutual understanding. He went on to quote from his encyclical Fratelli Tutti, "Through dialogue, young people can become great artists of peace." In conclusion, the Pope spoke about the importance of hope, especially in the face of war, poverty and discrimination. Such problems, he said, may lead us to think that our engagement in dialogue is futile because it produces few concrete results. In moments where we are tempted by such thoughts, the Pope said, it is important to remember that anything worth doing is not easy. Worthwhile things require sacrifice and a willingness to recommit ourselves every day, particularly when things seem not to go our way. And bringing his speech to a close, the Pope urged his audience to always keep hope alive. I'm Joseph Tulloch.
And there are multiple reports that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is approving a ceasefire deal, at least in principle, with Hezbollah. University of Miami Middle East expert Ira Sheskin says this would mean thousands of Israelis who have had to leave their homes along the northern border can now return.
Israel's goal here has always been to get Hezbollah out of the south of Lebanon so that their people in northern Israel can live peacefully. If they've accomplished that goal, and it seems to me that they've had, then it is time to move toward a ceasefire.
As far as the war in Gaza goes, he doesn't expect the situation to change until Hamas is completely defeated and an alternative government goes into the region. Michael Board tells us illegal immigration continues with many challenges for those guarding the southern border.
On Sunday, Texas state troopers caught a group of 200 people coming into the border town of Eagle Pass. Among them were 60 unaccompanied children, some as young as 2 years old. Video shows a bilingual cop asking one her age.
¿Qué tantos años tienes? Dos años.
That little girl in Spanish says her parents are already in the United States.
Estados Unidos? Okay.
But the group was far from just Central and South Americans. Six were from a pair of West African nations. DPS says in a statement this highlights the need for action to address the ongoing border crisis.
Meanwhile, the leaders of some large cities say that President-elect Trump, if he goes forward with the mass deportation of illegal immigrants, they will not help. But the mayor of Dallas, Eric Johnson, who is a Republican, says he's more than willing to support the effort.
Of course we'd support that. Of course we'd stand by President Trump in an effort to get rid of people in our country illegally who have violent criminal records.
He adds there are hidden costs to illegal immigration, pointing to a strain on the state's hospital system. But when it comes to deportation, Johnson faces opposition in Dallas. The city council there voting earlier this year on a resolution considering a state law that would allow police to arrest anyone they believe was in the country illegally. The special counsel in President-elect Donald Trump's federal election interference case is now filed to drop those charges. Reporter Lisa Rubin says this is likely the end of that case.
The Department of Justice seems to be leaving a door open for itself, but I'm not sure that's a door that they can open again after the conclusion of this presidency.
The Supreme Court put the entire case in doubt this year when the justices ruled that Trump had some presidential immunity. His team, meanwhile, applauding that decision, calling for an end to what they call political prosecution. Meanwhile, Donald Trump reportedly plans to revive the old Keystone Pipeline, which runs from Canada to the Texas coast. The project has been shuttered for years, but the experts say the move would send a strong message.
We're open for business once again. I think it's very valuable.
That's Carr Ingram, who heads the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers. He says all work on the pipeline was scrapped 3 years ago when President Biden canceled that permit. That means any new proposal would have to start over from scratch. And he says it's unclear if the Canadian company that led the effort would even still be interested. Scott Carr tells us the Centers for Disease Control now warning about a spike in what is commonly known as walking pneumonia.
The Centers for Disease Control says the exact number of cases is hard to determine, but they suggest that walking pneumonia is at its highest level now since COVID. Texas pediatrician Dr. Perla Soni says they're seeing lots of cases, and she fears it's just the start.
Yes, and I have seen kids who have been coughing for 3 weeks.
She says the disease is easily treated with antibiotics, though doctors are now reluctant to use them because of overuse in the past.
I feel horrible doing so much antibiotic, but it's so much in the community that I have to do it.
Experts say a spike is almost certainly coming after gatherings for Thanksgiving.
November 30th is Small Business Saturday, and a new study ranks the most and least friendly states for small businesses. Bankrate senior industry analyst Ted Rossman explains how states were ranked.
We used a bunch of different factors, including the cost of doing business, availability of labor, robustness of small business activity, access to capital, infrastructure, regulation and taxes. Those were really the broad categories.
Washington is ranked number one as the most business-friendly state, followed by Utah and Wyoming. Louisiana is the least friendly state for small businesses, followed by Mississippi and then Rhode Island. Natalie Migliorio tells us the TSA is gearing up for the Thanksgiving travel rush that's expected to get underway today.
TSA spokeswoman Lisa Farbstein says Thanksgiving is typically the agency's busiest time of year, reassuring travelers that airport staff is ready.
And this year we project to screen 18.3 million people through the Monday after Thanksgiving. That's the busiest days are going to be Tuesday and Wednesday, right before Thanksgiving, as people try to get out of town, obviously in the last minute.
Farbstein says airline travelers should expect roadway traffic into the airport and lines at baggage counters before they even get on the security checkpoint line. She's encouraging passengers to get to the airport at least 2 hours before their flight.
Meanwhile, AAA is expecting a record number of travelers on the road this Thanksgiving week as well, with traffic picking up as early as today.
Some schools get out on Tuesday, some get out on Wednesday, so that's going to alter your traffic flows in town, and then some businesses even close potentially early on Wednesday.
That's Brian Ortner with AAA. He says some Thanksgiving travelers will take an extra day and return on Monday, December 2nd. He reminds drivers that it may be best to get an early start. That's a look at the news on a Tuesday morning. More Catholic Connection coming your way. Stay tuned.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
How would you like to celebrate the Divine Mercy at the Shrine of the Divine Mercy in Poland on Divine Mercy Sunday? Well, you can. Steve Ray here, inviting you to join us in Poland as we follow the footprints of John Paul II, Maria Faustina, and Maximilian Kolbe. Daily Mass at the most iconic, beautiful churches and delicious local foods. Join us in April for Divine Mercy Sunday in Poland.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
From the archives, this
is the wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You know, many of you who have not been to confession for years, I make a bet it's on nothing. You're ashamed. There's nothing you could tell a priest he hadn't heard before. You don't want him to know who you are. Go to another city. Go to another state. Who's going to know who you are? God knows who you are. So all of these things that we're so afraid of, people's opinion, it doesn't mean anything. You know what our dear Lord said about other people's opinion? The opinion of men mean nothing to me. I always wondered how the liberals are going to interpret that inclusive language. They wouldn't dare say the opinion of women don't mean anything to me. It must be the opinions of people. Whatever it is, opinion made nothing to him. Why?
For more about Mother Angelica, visit EWTNRC.com.
Catholic Connection, across the country and around the globe on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. As you know, it's produced by, co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN, a regular guest of ours who is with us in Domino's Farms, where our studios are located, and that is Rob Muse from the American Freedom Law Center. So, Rob, I'm getting a sense, and I know we're going to talk about a specific case, but there's a lot of people who are pushing back against the nonsense. I was telling my viewers this morning and leading up to this story about, for example, the ladies of The View on ABC. I don't know if you heard this story, but as a lawyer, you would appreciate it. They had to read 4 legal notes live on air during one program because obviously what they're saying is extremely sensitive or could trigger legal action. So to me, the fact that the networks are noticing this and doing something about it shows that our speaking up and pushing back is making a difference. Before we get into the specific case, which I know is also breaking news, I just wanted to ask you about that out of the gate. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, great to be with you. Yeah, this election has changed a lot of things. As I did see those legal notices they had to read because they're concerned about apparently defamation lawsuits or some other lawsuits being brought against them. So the different disinformation they've been peddling for a long time. You know, even culturally, and you may have seen this as well. You see in these national, professional sports, you see now the athletes, doing the Trump dance in the end zone. And all of a sudden now, what was at one time considered to be, racist and bigoted. And, if you have anything to do with supporting Trump, now that, the tide is turning. People, I think, are tired of this woke nonsense that are censoring, half of the Americans plus, more than half the Americans in our view on things. And so we're seeing it, I think, politically. You can see so much has changed even, with Trump's election, and will change quite a bit. We're seeing it on the news media, the networks, and we're seeing it culturally in sports and things. So there really is there's going to be a sea change, and it's already starting, I think, with the election of President Trump, and for many good reasons.
Well, we brought you on today specifically to talk about a development in a case you were handling, and this is about a Catholic priest pushing back and really speaking up for pro-lifers and for the faith in general. Tell us about the latest news that came out actually just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it was on Friday, and as your listeners, I know well aware, the Department of Justice has been weaponized, particularly to attack pro-lifers, go after them with the draconian Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, or FACE, as well as this Section 18 U.S.C. 241 conspiracy to violate civil rights. We have, peaceful protesters who, if they engaged in any criminal activity, at best it was a simple local trespass misdemeanor, and yet we have, several pro-lifers who are serving terms of years in federal prisons in Washington, D.C. And, you know, there's been face cases criminally brought in Michigan, brought in Tennessee. And just as a side note, I saw a story late on Friday as well that in the Michigan case, the judge has stayed sentencing until the new administration takes over because he's aware that Trump has said he's going to pardon these individuals. Well, part of this weaponization of the Department of Justice going after pro-lifers is they filed a face civil lawsuit. Face not only has criminal penalties, it also has civil penalties. The elements are precisely the same, but they decide to bring this action civilly against Father Fidelis and against, in this same case, Monica Miller is also one of the defendants. The Citizens for Pro-Life Society is also a defendant, as well as several others. We happen to represent Father Fidelis in this case, we filed a motion to dismiss the lawsuit, which the judge denied, which was pathetic because all the actions of Father Fidelis were peaceful. All he did, he went into the this abortion center, handing out roses. The abortion personnel asked all their quote unquote patients to leave the waiting room while he was there, and then Father Fidelis and a couple of the other pro-lifers just kneeled and prayed, and the police carried him out. Where is the threat of violence or the physical obstruction? This doesn't even exist. But he denied our motion to dismiss, which in some respects might have been a blessing because then now that gave us the opportunity to file counterclaims and a third-party complaint against Merrick Garland. So he's fighting back. In a civil lawsuit, unlike in a criminal lawsuit, you can file counterclaims against them for their actions against you. So we countersued the federal government, the Department of Justice, and we filed a third-party complaint bringing Attorney General Merrick Garland into the case personally, and we're suing them for violations of the First Amendment, the Fifth Amendment's Equal Protection Clause, as well as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So we're going after them now personally for their bogus lawsuit against Father Fidelis, which violates federal law. I mean, there's a difference between what's national and what is truly local. He was already prosecuted locally for a simple trespass. I believe he got probation because that's all it was a simple trespass. And now they're trying to use this draconian face law against them, which is a violation of federal law. And so we filed again counterclaims and third party claims against Merrick Garland himself. Interestingly, under the federal statute, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, you can get damages against government officials. Typically, government officials have immunity against claims for damages. They don't have immunity, as it were, against claims for injunctive relief, declaratory relief, which are considered prospective relief. They have immunity against damages, but the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in a recent case by the U.S. Supreme Court said no, Congress intended to waive federal immunity for claims under that statute, so we're going against Merrick Garland. So even when he leaves office, when President Trump takes over, we're still going to pursue him personally and individually for his actions against Father Fidelis and against the other pro-lifers.
So given that this is counterclaim, and I'm so glad that you're pushing back on this and using the system properly because you have that right and you have that avenue available, when this happens with a counterclaim, could Garland stop what he's doing then and drop the case, or what do you think? Given what's happening now with the election and President-elect Trump coming in January, what do you think his modus operandi is going to be from this point on?
Well, I don't really think anybody on the left will ever do anything right on a matter of principle. We'll see. I mean, I think the writing's on the wall we saw with Jack Smith with his prosecution against President Trump.
Yeah.
They really dismissed that. So who knows? Possibly, and really, they had no choice but to do that. Is it possible that he could turn and dismiss the civil claims? Yeah, he could. But even if he dismissed the civil claims against Father Fidelis, that doesn't make our third party claim go away, or our counterclaims go away. So we'll see what they want to do. You know, my approach on all this stuff is always attack, attack, attack. Right? I hate being on the defensive. I always want to be in the offensive and go after them for the violation of civil rights. You know, as we noted we sent out posted this up on our website on Friday because I filed all this late on Friday. As the Attorney General knows, because he's using it against the pro-lifers to conspire to violate the civil rights of a private citizen, which in my view these prosecutions are, and particularly the civil case, that itself is a federal crime which carries a 10-year criminal penalty. So, turnabout is fair play, as the old saying goes. So you know, the President Trump has made this a point, and I think, you know, Pam Bondi, who's his new selected person to take over for the Department of Justice, they're going to look at all these things and say, look, were there federal law violations committed by members of the Department of Justice, FBI, and so forth? And, you know, these people need to be held accountable. So you never know. You know, this could. I do think this civil lawsuit is a violation of civil rights, which is the basis for our counterclaims. And quite frankly, it could be a basis for a federal criminal complaint brought by the Department of Justice somewhere down the road. But again, that's not my purview. I'm not a prosecutor, so I can't prosecute federal criminal laws. But I can assert federal civil cases on behalf of pro-lifers, and that's what we're doing here in the case of Father Fidelis.
We have been talking with Rob Muse in the American Freedom Law Center. The website is AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org, AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
And now, the EWTN Family Prayer with Father Joseph.
Family, a prayer that we pray together is a powerful prayer. So please pray together with me, our EWTN family prayer. Today we pray for those who are suffering with Parkinson's disease. Lord Jesus Christ, consolation of the afflicted, you are our refuge. We pray for those who are suffering the effects of Parkinson's disease. As they lose their physical strength and abilities, increase their spiritual strength and abilities. Renew their inner spirit day after day, and through their share in your sufferings, give the grace of conversion to sinners. In their weakness, reveal your strength. Give peace and joy to those who care for them. Amen.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
In the midst of our culture today, in this age of relativism, which wants to grant Jesus some significance, but not so much, so we'll give him wise man, great leader, inspiring preacher, great teacher, prophet. You don't get that option when you claim to be God. What reasons do we have to believe that he is who he said he is? And it's important, again, to employ the use of our reason and to understand that faith is not blind. My faith, and please God, the faith of everyone here, is not blind. It rests on something. It rests on a number of things, not least of which is my own experience of God, but it also has something substantial which can be claimed through history. We're not talking about a galaxy long, long ago, far, far away when we talk about Jesus. We're talking about a precise moment in history which has been testified to by countless testimonies, and you and I have access to them.
The Call, a call from God. Father Vincent Serpa shares his experience.
It began when I was in second grade. I was preparing for my first Holy Communion, and I went to with my mother and father to see The Bells of St. Mary's, the movie with Bing Crosby and Ingrid Bergman. He was the singing pastor, and she was the sister principal of the school. And at one point in the movie, the sister was being transferred out of the school, and it was very painful for her because she thought it was because of her disagreements with the pastor, and it was really because she was ill and didn't know it. There's a scene with her kneeling before the tabernacle in the convent chapel, and I had never seen anybody pray before a tabernacle before. I'd seen them pray before statues, but at this particular time in my life, I was learning about the real presence of the Blessed Sacrament in catechism class, and it made a lot of sense to me. The other thing that moved me was that she was doing the difficult thing because she loved the Lord, and that was very impressive to me. Shortly thereafter, at the catechism class, the sister that had been teaching the boys was transferred away. And I remember when they announced, my eyes filled with tears because I thought that she was doing the difficult thing because she loved the Lord. Again, that just galvanized that whole experience that I had had. And shortly after that, I was at my grandmother's house, and I noticed a picture of St. Martin de Porres, or a statue of him. He was Blessed Martin then, in a Mary Knoll magazine. And under it said, Dominican Brother. So I came into the kitchen and I told my mother, I want to be one of those. Years later, I actually did. I became a Dominican lay brother. And then after further discernment, I decided that what the Lord was really calling me to was to be a priest, because I wanted to celebrate Mass And that's the priest's principal function. It's what makes him a priest, is to celebrate that sacrifice. And that's what I did.
For information on the priesthood or religious life, log on to www.ewtn.com/religious-life.
Talking with attorney Rob Muse from the American Freedom Law Center. AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org is a website about some developing stories regarding pro-lifers. So let's talk in general in terms of where you see this all going, because under this new administration, I think there seems to be a lot of hope. Not that Trump is perfect in the pro-life areas, but the government was used against him in a weaponization type of a situation over and over and over again. So I think his team is sensitive to what's happening here. So you have the pro-lifers, your pro-lifer that you're representing here, the others that have been sentenced. I'm thinking that, again, as you mentioned, I mean, there's a lot of talk that could change, that these things could be overturned. You think about the man from Pennsylvania whose name escapes me now, where they came in, you know, guns a-blazing, all these different federal agents into the man's home and everything.
Mark, how he
was violated. I mean, yeah. I do think, even though we live in such a litigious society, you hate to sit there and say you got to go to court all the time, you have to go to court all the time, but you have to stand up for yourself, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, your point about, and I think the point here is that, look, I don't think this Department of Justice is going to be weaponized, right? And I wouldn't want them to be. I don't care who's in control. I don't want these levers of government power to be used to go after, you know, political opponents. So what I think will happen, and I'm hoping will happen, is that when the new Department of Justice comes in and President Trump takes office, he'll pardon these pro-lifers who are in jail.
Well, that's what I mean, that he'll be sensitive to this. I'm not saying he's going to use it to go after people, but that he'll be sensitive to this, right?
Right. Remedy the harms that have already occurred.
Right.
Such as pardoning the individuals who are in jail so they can get out, commuting whatever sentences and convictions that they have, removing them, and also, you know, dismissing these bogus civil lawsuits against pro-lifers. But again, I do think if there are legitimate, you know, federal claims to advance against people who've been violating other civil rights, I think that's fair game. I don't think that's weaponization of government. I think that is putting an end to the weaponization of government. But I certainly would not support, throwing just, you know, because somebody's your political opponent, drumming up some sort of law, you know, some sort of crime against them and throwing them in jail. As we know, the administrative state and the laws are so ridiculous. You probably, you know, if you searched hard, you could probably find, you know, some tax violation or some other, you know, strange violation that you could go after almost anybody at any time. Unfortunately, it's the nature of how big the administrative and, state has become. But I do hope that this administration doesn't weaponize like Department of Justice. And again, I don't think they will. That's not the nature of conservatives. That's not what we do, you know, but I do hope he remedies these past harms, and I do think he will. I don't have any inside scoop on this, but he's somebody who's kept promises. My goodness, he's probably the first politician in my entire lifetime who says I'm going to do something and actually does it. And I think this is something that he has said publicly. I understand that he's going to pardon these individuals. I hope he does, stops this weaponization and cleans house in the Department of Justice and the FBI, so that people can trust it again. You know, because of the nature of the work that I do, when President Trump won the election, I felt this sort of relief that, okay, this sort of burden of, you know, waiting for the FBI to knock on your door any day because of the nature of the work I do, that fear has evaporated. And it's true. I mean, it's a weight that hangs on your shoulder if you're going to be in this battle space. We see lawyers who operate in this area against administration losing their licenses left and right by, you know, the liberal, licensing boards in California and other places. And it's frightening to have this kind of hang over your head, but, you know, you just got to persist. And I'm grateful that he won this election and that threat, I think, will be lifted. And again, I hope he remedies these past harms with individuals who are, you know, sitting in federal prisons in Washington, D.C. right now or in Virginia for Washington, D.C. offenses, you know, for 3-4 years. It's crazy.
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you said you felt a sense of relief. And in working with others that are doing the same type of law or in these types of circles, people who are handling these types of cases, are they sharing that feeling as well, do you think, since the election?
Yeah, absolutely. I think absolutely. There is a bit of a sigh of relief. There is a sense that hopefully justice will prevail. And, you know, and hopefully, President Trump can get a lot more judicial appointments in as well who are, you know, conservative justices who will follow what the law is. That's all we want. We just want an equal playing field. You know, I don't necessarily need a judge who's just going to always rule, you know, one way on particular cases. I just want an equal playing field, and I don't want to have to be dealing with these judges who are pure ideologues. And you know, as soon as you file the lawsuit and it gets, you know, quote unquote, randomly assigned to the judge, and you see who that judge is, you're like, you know, you can almost determine the outcome of a case these days more by who the judge is assigned to than by what the law is. And that's a problem. Mm-hmm. that's a serious problem with our justice system. And, you know, hopefully there'll be more judges appointed who will be, who will follow the law. That's all we want is judges who will follow the law. And, you know, the left is apoplectic over this Supreme Court, right? Because they might rule, you know, in favor of, conservative views based on what the law is on occasion, as opposed to just doing what is, the ideological thing to do that the left wants. This election was huge in terms of where we are in America right now, and it really is.
Yeah.
Stealing that phrase from the Ronald Reagan's victory, it's morning again in America, and a lot of
absolutely.
People are feeling that. Yeah,
Rob, thank you so much. Keep us posted on this case as it goes through the system and the other cases on which you're working. We've been talking with Rob Muse in the American Freedom Law Center. The website is AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org. AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org. We'll be right back on a Tuesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Stay tuned.
She was a mystic and reformer who died at the age of 33.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Catherine of Siena accomplished something no one thought possible. She convinced Pope Gregory XI to return to Rome after the popes had lived in France for almost the whole of the 14th century. They've been there ever since.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
There is genuine consolation from the Catholic Catechism regarding the death of a loved one. The Christian who dies in Christ Jesus, we are told, is away from the body and at home with the Lord. Death marks the end of a Christian's sacramental life, but the fulfillment of his new birth, which began at baptism, now has a definitive conformity to the image of Jesus Christ. The Christian funeral does not give the deceased a sacrament or sacramentals because he or she has passed beyond the sacramental economy. The different funeral rites express the paschal character of Christian death. The greatest consolation to the Christian is the knowledge that even in death, we are separated only temporarily, that one day, if we have lived well, we will all be together again in Christ. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books, on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. Great to be with you, and great to talk about the work of Father Joseph Fessio, founder of Ignatius Press and the University of San Francisco St. Ignatius Institute. And it's actually a beautiful biography about this amazing man of God. And the title of the book, published by Ignatius, is Father Joseph Fessio, California Black Robe. On the phone with us is the author, Father Cornelius M. Buckley. And Father, thank you for joining us. I'm going to give a little bit of background about you first. You were born in California back in 1925, serving in the Navy during World War II, graduated from the University of Santa Clara, and the same year, in 1950, joining the Jesuits. After studies, he was a professor of history at the University of San Francisco until his recent retirement back in 1998. In 2004, he became a chaplain of Thomas Aquinas College, a position held until 2022 when he moved to the Jesuit Finishing School, his term for the Society of Jesus Retirement Community in California. And here he waits for his final assignment. And Father, you're keeping busy. Let's talk about this book and what it meant for you, first of all, Father, to write this book. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. I was both elated and surprised when the press came to me and asked me if I would do this. And that was years ago, and I said, yes, I'd do it. And I was with Father Fletcher, very close to him after 1967. And we were very close, and our lifestyles were different, but nevertheless, we managed to get along quite well together.
So how did this book come about? Because Father Fessio, from what I understand, was reluctant to have his biography written because he's a very humble man.
Well, yeah, that's right, but he's not in charge of the press completely. There are other people there, and there's the president of the press and other people like that, and they wanted this particular book to be written. So it was, and I don't think he paid much attention to it. They actually asked somebody who was a kind of professional at this to make it question him about his early ages, of course, his early childhood and his high school work and so forth. So I didn't know him at that time, but I certainly knew him very closely after the two of us were sent together at Santa Clara to teach there. And we formed a very close friendship, and it's been that way ever since. And so that's why I got to know him quite well.
So why do you think his life story, needs to be told, Father?
Well, I think for two reasons. One is, I don't know if I don't like to say it, but people say today that Jesuit schools were both Jesuit and Catholic, and today they're Jesuit, but they're not Catholic. What happened? And also the fact that Father Fessio has propagated through the press the writings and the thinkings of the great theologians that we would otherwise know, theologians in Europe. And especially his close relationship with Father de Lubach, who was very, very influential in his life and still is, and Cardinal Ratzinger, and another one, the Pope Pius, of course, Pope John Paul, rather. And so he has brought these theologians to the attention of the American, or I should say rather the English-speaking public throughout the world.
Mm. So in terms of Father Fessio's life, there's so much information, and it's really like interesting the way it weaves in and out of different time periods. How did you manage to get everything together in a way that makes it easy to follow?
It was not easy, believe me, because here's the problem. He was always involved in so many things. So how do you do it? Do you take one of these things and examine it and bring it all the way down to its conclusion? Or do you take the chronological area and say that here he had three or four of these projects going at the same time, and how did they work out? That was a problem. It was a problem from the very beginning, and I think what I did was I took it topically rather than chronologically.
How long, Father, and by the way, we're talking with Father Cornelius Buckley on this new book from Ignatius Press, all about Father Joseph Fessio, a good friend of ours here at EW10. The book is California Black Robe. When did you start actually working on this, Father?
When did you say?
Pardon? Yes, when did you start working on the book?
Oh, I think it was about five or more years ago. About 5 years
Wow.
ago. I didn't work on it too much. I did work on it very much. And it was just something in the back closet. And but then Mark Bumley and other people of the press, who were the president of the press, kind of pushed me on, and I got to it more and more, and then it became more of a challenge in the last a couple of years, especially the last year.
Hmm. So what is the most surprising thing you think the readers of this book, Black Robe, will learn about Father Fessio and his life?
Well, he's certainly a very, very interesting person. And as I say, personality-wise, he can only be described in similes and so forth. But I think it might be a surprise to just find out what happened to Catholic education. What happened to Jesuit education? What happened to the Jesuit schools that were so prominent before World War II? Today are, as I say, still Jesuit, but they're not Catholic any longer. What happened? How did this take place? Was there a reaction? What was the reaction? What was the result of the reaction? I think that's going to be a question and a topic that people will be interested in, particularly those who are graduates of the Jesuit colleges. And, of course, that is going into the high schools now today. Mm-hmm. So, yes, go ahead.
I was just going to say, well, why do you think that is? Because you have a similar background in terms of your priesthood. What do you think happened? I know we're talking about Father Fessio, but being that you're both now experienced, obviously experienced priests, and you've been out there for many years ministering to people, what do you think happened? Because I think that's a question that we're still trying to answer. So many of us, even if we're not connected to the Jesuits in any way.
Yeah. Well, I think I like to put it down. Maybe I didn't stress this enough. I think the first of all is the World War II created the ability for the veterans to apply to schools throughout the country. And in order to accommodate their needs, in order to accommodate their numbers, the Jesuits compromised in order to get better attendance. This was the GI Bill. And so the GI Bill was one thing that I think had a great effect, and we don't maybe notice that too much today, on Jesuit education. And then, too, these new students that were coming in were certainly not Catholic. They had to be accommodated there. And at the same time, another element came, another wave, if you will, and that was the post-Vatican II theologians. And that was an extreme attitude that we don't realize today. It was almost funny how they interpreted the new church and what it would be like. And so you get these two elements together, and you kind of water down the Jesuit ideal of what a college, a university should be. And I think that what's happened since then is the number of vocations, general vocations, have gone down completely. And so we have a situation today in which these schools are, as I say, still Jesuit-run. I mean, they're Jesuits there. They're no longer Catholic.
Yeah, that's very true. We're talking with Father Cornelius M. Buckley, S.J., who is the author of this beautiful new book all about our friend Father Fessio, Father Joseph Fessio, of course, from Ignatius Press. A terrific book, and a look at this amazing life of a wonderful priest who's been so faithful and worked so hard. The title of the book is Father Joseph Fessio, California Black Robe. Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned, of course, Cardinal Ratzinger, then Pope Benedict. What kind of impact did Ratzinger have on Father Fessio, do you think?
Oh, I think very much so. I think from the very beginning, he talked about him long before he was a cardinal. And he talked about him, his professor, how wonderful he was, and what an extraordinary personality, what an extraordinary man he was. And I think, as you see in the book, chronological, would single him out from time to time, you know, and just talk to him. And they had nice conversations. He was very much influenced by him. Mm. And but especially influenced by Father DeLuvac, I think. And, he just came at a time when all three of these theologians were very important. And he was just a little listener there, if you will. A very, very intelligent man he is, and took advantage of that. And he's also, people say how intelligent he is and so forth, and that's true. But at the same time, he's very down to earth and very, it can be very funny and not take a lot of these things too seriously.
Yeah, yeah. So why do you think people should read your book, Father, about Father Fessio? What would you say to our listeners this morning? Maybe this would make a nice Christmas gift or a read for over the holidays?
Oh, I think so. I hope so. It's a good analogy of what happened in the church, after Vatican II until now, and how Father Fessio is a kind of a contradiction to all those people that we hear about that were so important. He was an ordinary individual working in the college, and at the same time, was failed, and his experiment there failed completely. And then the printing experiment was most successful, even though there was a great deal of opposition in the beginning. So I think it's a nice book to read, I think, to find out just what the background was of the last 20, 30, 50 years, 60 years of the Church in the United States.
So, Father, are you working on any other books for Ignatius Press, or have any projects that you're looking at doing?
Well, I kind of play around with the translations of early Jesuit missionary to Alaska. I don't know where that is going to go. I'm not doing anything on that now. But when I have time, it's like doing a crossword puzzle. You have time, you do it. And if you don't, you put it aside. So it kind of, that keeps me busy. And it's a very, very interesting man. I had a very interesting time of our history in the United States and what was taking place there in the 1870s, and so where the church was and so forth and how it's grown.
Well, Father, thank you. What a delight to have you on the program this morning. Thanks for your great work and your continued mission to preach the truth and love, especially about someone as influential as our dear friend, Father Joseph Fessio. The book is Father Joseph Fessio, S.J., California Black Robe, published by our friends at Ignatius Press and written by our new friend, Father Cornelius M. Buckley. We'll be right back on Catholic Connection. Thanks, Father.
Thank you very much, and God bless you and your wonderful work.
Thank you so much, Father. We'll be right back. Catholic Connection is sponsored by House of Joppa. House of Joppa's mission is to share the beauty of our one holy Catholic and apostolic faith in our homes through Catholic home decor, art, candles, statues, rosaries, and Catholic jewelry. They're gifts designed to help you live out your Catholic faith. For more information, go to houseofjoppa.com. That's House of Joppa, JOPPA.com.
More of Catholic Connection coming up on EWTN and Ave Maria Radio.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
The following program is brought to you in part by MyCatholicWill.com. Surveys show that more than half of Americans do not have a will. At MyCatholicWill.com, it takes as little as 15 minutes to write your will and secure a legacy of faith. MyCatholicWill.com is the exclusive online destination for creating a Catholic will. The process of writing a will is simple and now more accessible than ever. MyCatholicWill.com, a legacy of faith for those you love.
This show is underwritten in part by the following nonprofit company.
My dear brothers and sisters, I'm Bishop Gerald Vinke of the Diocese of Salina in Kansas. This year, you can create a Christmas miracle for a child growing up in the extreme poverty of a developing country. By donating to Send a Box of Joy, you will surprise a child with what could be the first Christmas gift of his or her life. You can bless a child today by donating at boxofjoy.org.
Tuning in to the EWTN and the Ave Maria Radio Networks. Find us both online, EWTN.com and AveMariaRadio.net. In addition to the archives, you'll find daily at the archives section of AveMariaRadio.net. I always want to encourage you, for news and views from a truly Catholic perspective, please visit our news sources. It's so important to make sure that you are seeing things through the lens, as Al Cresta always says, of Scripture and the teachings of the Catholic Church. So how do you do that? Well, my faves, Catholic News Agency, I use them every day, CatholicNewsAgency.com, the National Catholic Register, NCRegister.com, and then, of course, there are great programs here on the EWTN network that help you take a look at the news, again, through a Catholic perspective. You have The World Over with News Director Raymond Arroyo. You have EWTN News Nightly every single night, covering all the stories in the U.S. and around the world. You have In Depth. It's a relatively new program looking at issues in depth from the news perspective. So just to keep that in mind, when you see something out there in the news or in the world and you're troubled by it, come to us. We've got the resources. Have a great day. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.